You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from Samantha Beaver of Memra Consulting. Is that right, Samantha?
Yeah, Memra Language Services.
Memra Language Services. Well, I totally destroyed that, so I apologize. So Memra Language Services, how about you tell us what that is?
Okay, so Memra Language Services is basically a company that does data analysis for other companies. But instead of your traditional business metrics, I look at language data, usually unstructured language data, to give the company useful and actionable insights. And normally it's internal stuff. So team functionality, company culture, things like that. Yeah.
So can you repeat that phrase you said? It was the language, language insights.
Yeah. Actionable and language insights.
Okay. What are actionable language insights?
Well, so everybody wants a way to measure things that are sort of nebulous. So culture is something that people care about, but how do you measure culture? It's hard.
I have no idea.
Right? And I think most people don't know how, but linguists actually study culture because language and culture are sort of two sides of the same coin. And so when linguists study culture, they use language as a metric to track and measure culture. And it's a good metric because people talk the way they talk without sort of manipulating it in the way that they sometimes would other parts of culture. For example, like how you dress, the music you listen to, you can sort of be more intentional about that.
Sure.
And project a certain self.
Okay.
Whereas with language, you just sort of are who you are. And so it tells a true story about you.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you can measure language use, you can also measure culture.
All right. So when you say measure language use, are you measuring specific words or phrases or dialects of?
Yes. So all of the above. Sometimes the linguistic features that I scan for in a text are words. Sometimes they're phrases. And sometimes it's more about like the structure of a word or a phrase.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And what are you looking for specifically? Is it just differences alone, or is there certain things that this culture, so to speak, would be a certain way because of this thing in their language? Or?
So anytime I approach like a data project, obviously I need to figure out what the company is sort of concerned about. Sometimes companies are concerned about gender issues in the workplace. Sometimes it's like generational communication. And sometimes it's sort of more general, like they want to see more about internal team functionality. So like how does the development team, you know, how are they functioning as compared to the community impact team?
Sure.
Or whatever.
Sure.
And so depending on sort of the area of interest, then I select a linguistic research paradigm to use.
Okay.
And that sort of determines the specific parts of language that I'm scanning for.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So is this software?
It's not software.
So it's all manual.
It's all manual, but there's software in the works right now. So I'm working on that piece. But right now it's all manual. And actually, linguists who use these same techniques just in an academic context for research are mostly doing it manually too.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's sort of crazy.
So you're just you're looking at texts or conversations, or how are you getting the actual language?
So when I first started out, I thought that a big part of what I would do is designing surveys to collect the data.
Sure.
But what I've found since I've been doing this work is that actually most businesses have tons of language data already.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So for example, exit surveys.
Okay.
Or engagement surveys, any kind of survey that would have an open-ended question response.
Sure.
Emails, calls, conversations, if you use a social media platform like Slack.
Sure.
All of that is really rich language data.
Okay.
And you already have it, and it's just lying around.
Sure.
And no one's doing anything with it.
Huh.
And so all it takes is someone who's trained in language analysis
Sure.
to take that data and tell you what it means.
All right. And then what do you do with that data?
Well, it's sort of a three-step process. The first is to scan the text for the linguistic features and identify them.
Okay.
And just to give an example, like for example, the project I'm working on right now, I'm scanning the text for conflict features and politeness features.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So it's people are really nice or people are not so nice.
Yeah. Politeness is in this particular instance like a positive thing. So if you score high if your politeness score is high, that means you're being extra polite. But if you score low in politeness, it doesn't mean you're being rude. It just means you're not being polite.
Gotcha.
And then the conflict score indicates not necessarily that there's a problem, but that the speaker is extremely passionate about the topic and would be willing to create conflict based on the topic.
Interesting. So wait. This sounds like Minority Report to me. Like you're presupposing that someone will or could?
That they're likely to.
Okay, based on the passion that they have in their text that you're reading.
Yes.
Can you give an example?
Do you mean an example of the linguistic features?
Yeah, like an example of, let's say, polite versus less than polite versus... Sure.
Let's do politeness because I think that one's a little bit easier. So when I assign a text a politeness score, I'm looking at three things. The first thing is the form of the sentence. So for example, you know, most people have heard of directives, interrogatives, imperatives. They'll sort of just, it's the type of sentence that it is. And a directive is when you tell someone to do something.
Okay.
So in general, directives are a really good way to measure politeness because people don't like to tell others to do things in general. It makes them uncomfortable. So when...
So interesting you say that. I'm going to pause you right there.
Okay.
Because one, I love to tell people what to do. But two, I just got back from going out to eat with my son.
Yeah.
And I said, he's 5 years old now, like just turned five. And I told him he has to order. He started crying.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And all he had to do was just tell the waitress what he wanted to order. So I said, hey, to the waitress, I'm like, hey, this is his first time ordering. And he's 5 years old. So I figured sooner or later he's going to have to talk to humans outside of his parents.
Yeah, right.
And friends. So it was a little child's menu that they had. So we had circled what he wanted so that he would remember. I'm like, all you have to do is point. And so he's like crying while pointing.
Oh my gosh.
And thank goodness the waitress is cool. She's like, oh yeah, I get this, no big deal. And she kind of felt bad for him. But he was so just distraught.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
Yeah, it's so interesting because obviously there's individual variations. So like you said, I love telling people what to do. And obviously some people don't mind it, right? But in general, when you have to give someone a directive, people are more likely to mitigate their language with politeness features because they think that if they add features that indicate they're being extra polite, it'll make the directive seem less abrasive.
So you're saying something like, would you please, instead of just do this kind of thing?
Yes. So would you please is a good, you know, polite example, but sometimes they're even more subtle than that. So the example that I like to use is, if you are at someone's house and you want them to close the window, but you know, you're their guest and you don't really want to tell them to close the window or you don't feel comfortable getting up and closing the window.
Sure.
You might say something as indirect as, I'm a little chilly in here.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And in the right context, your host would probably interpret that as meaning that they should do something about your chilliness, right?
Interesting.
So that's a super indirect way to give a directive.
Okay. So just to clarify, you saying that the indirect way is more polite?
Well, it is more polite in like traditional Western culture, but it's not only associated with politeness, it's also associated with certain like gender conversational styles.
Sure.
So women tend to be much more indirect than men generally. And so two women communicating together might be very indirect, but still not have a miscommunication.
Sure.
Whereas sometimes when women and men are talking to each other and the woman is being very indirect, the man might not interpret the directive correctly and say, well, you didn't ask me to do that.
Right.
And she's thinking, yes, I did. I just was being indirect because I wanted to be
sure.
polite.
I always think of the movie White Man Can't Jump when Rosie Perez, I think, asked for a glass of water at night. And anyways, the other character, I think it was Woody Harrelson, just went to get her water. And she's like, no, I'm thirsty for our relationship to grow. Or something like that. It's been a little while. But it was totally just, and Woody's just like, I got you a glass of water because he asked for a glass of water.
Yeah.
Or you said you're thirsty, whatever. So it's interesting that you're talking that way.
Yeah.
Because I can totally see how my wife talks in crazy indirects. And I'm like, oh, I got to decipher what she's meaning here.
Yes. Yeah. And the funny thing is that it's not, like, it's not intentional, right?
Sure.
Because you're just... You grow up speaking your native language, mm-hmm. and if you're a woman, you're socialized into a like a typical female way of communicating.
Sure.
So it's just what you learn how to do, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like you're intentionally being indirect or intentionally
sure.
being direct. It's sort of just who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, yes. And my husband and I too, like, even though I know all of these things about language,
sure.
it's like hard to avoid. You know, I find myself giving him super indirect directives.
Sure.
And then still getting upset when he doesn't understand what I mean, even though I know that I wasn't being very clear. You
sure.
know? So, yeah.
Funny. Okay. So it's not just me. All right.
No,
yay.
Not just you.
Nice. All right. So going back to the stuff, sorry about the interruption.
No,
there.
That's okay.
Going back to the polite and the less than polite and all that,
mm-hmm.
can you take us through some more examples there?
Sure. Okay, so in order to give a text a politeness score, one thing you have to look at is directness. So
okay.
how direct is the person being?
Sure.
Based on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is if they're giving a directive, is it a directive? Is it a request or is it advice? And that... Those three categories have to do with the benefit to the potential speaker. And all of these things are sort of like linguistic-y details.
Sure.
But anyways, those are some of the factors that I'm considering when calculating like the final politeness score.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can imagine that if you had a survey, each response would get a score for politeness.
Mm-hmm.
And then and that score has a numeric value. So
okay.
then at the end, the data analysis is still, you know, a numeric analysis, a
sure.
statistical analysis. It's
uh-huh.
just that it's based on language data.
Sure.
And most, like, the language data is just free-floating and completely unorganized. So
mm-hmm.
the linguist's job is to organize it
sure.
according to politeness or conflict or gender or whatever.
Right.
And then make sense of it so that it's meaningful.
All right.
Yeah.
It's gonna take forever.
It does take forever, yeah. Which is why I'm highly motivated to get some of that process automated.
Sure.
Like with software.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I imagine you could scan, you could set up some rules, I imagine, if I'm just looking, like, you look at a website of any kind that has, like, even a blog.
Yeah.
Right? It would take a volume of time to go through that blog and say, okay, this is the general characteristic of this blog. This is the tone and all that jazz.
Yes.
Now we got 500 more to go.
Yes. It's super, it does. It takes a long time.
Okay.
And there are parts of speech taggers out there, you know, so there is software that exists that'll like tag all of the parts of speech of a sentence or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
The things that are interesting to a linguist go sort of beyond parts of speech. It's not really enough just to count the nouns and the verbs.
Sure.
Yeah. It's more about structure and phrasing.
Right.
And some of those things are complicated for a computer to pick out.
Sure.
Which is why, we're not quite at the point where you can completely get rid of the human yet, but I think
sure.
it's definitely in the near future. So
we're talking about just language only or just universally?
Oh, I think language, mainly with language stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, for example, like a human might interpret correctly when I say, oh, I'm a little bit chilly in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friend or my husband might know that that means that he should go close the window.
Sure.
But a computer would never be able to figure that out.
Oh,
right?
Interesting. Sure, sure.
Because I'm not saying what I mean.
Right. The distance between those two dots.
Yeah.
Is much farther than saying, hey, can you close the window? Computer and say, oh, get it. You want the window closed.
Right.
You say you're cold, computer, to connect to close the window. That's a greater distance. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and so much of how we interpret like sentences and what they mean
mm-hmm.
is based on our shared cultural knowledge.
Sure.
So like my husband knows that when I say that he should go close the window,
mm-hmm.
but a computer doesn't have that shared cultural knowledge.
Sure.
So it would be really hard for them to correctly interpret my meaning.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and that's why it's hard to automate it completely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So now, in the case of this window thing, just as that, using that example, if your husband were to just stand up and go over and close the window after you said that you were cold, but you really meant you have this fan on you that you wanted shut off instead.
Right.
Like, would you get upset at your husband?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like,
or you would say, why did you close that window, right? Because the window never came into play for face value.
Right.
And he essentially interpreted what you meant, but he interpreted it incorrectly.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the whole problem with communication, is that there's a ton of different ways to say what you mean.
Sure.
And you, every day, when you're talking to the people around you, you have to decide what is the best way. And there's lots of different factors that go into that. Mm-hmm. And so I might say, I'm chilly in here, and I'm trying to get him to turn the fan off. And if it doesn't work, that's a miscommunication. And you would sort of take a step back and either clarify, like, oh, actually, what I, it would be better if you could turn the fan off, right?
Right.
But you can imagine that in a workplace context, the same kinds of things are happening all the time.
Sure.
Miscommunications and language choices that people are making.
Sure.
Directness, indirectness, politeness, conflict, all of those things. But the consequences are more severe because it leads to like bad feelings at work or employee turnover.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, with your friends and family, it's easier to, you know, correct miscommunication.
Sure.
Because you have a
generally
relationship. Yeah, generally, right? Not always, but generally.
Sure.
Yeah, but at work it's hard.
So you, let me shift into the business side here.
Okay.
You got, because this seems like on the verge of overwhelming, which means that I could see people totally hiring you to solve a lot of problems before they actually become problems.
Right.
Or maybe to even become aware of some problems.
Yes.
So you went to school to get all this education, I imagine, right?
Yes. I have a master's in applied English linguistics.
Okay. And that's a mouthful. And what made you decide to start your own business in this field? Because I imagine, I don't know of any competitors that you have.
Yeah, there aren't really a lot.
Okay.
And linguists very rarely step outside of academia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there are some out there. You know, Google hires computational linguists to work on Alexa.
Okay.
You know, like in the natural language processing and speech recognition. Those are all linguists, but they're not really doing this kind of linguistic work.
Sure.
It's more like computer science mixed with linguistics.
Okay.
But anyways, I don't, you know, people ask me all the time how I had this idea to do this, and I don't really remember, like, what led to the idea.
Sure.
But I think part of it was being a student and learning all of these research techniques and constantly seeing how useful and awesome they were.
Sure.
And thinking, these are useful for everybody.
Like, right.
Everyone
Very
should
true.
Know this.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing that nobody else had access to it because linguists weren't taking it outside of the typical like research sphere. And I think that's sort of what led me to consider the idea of, creating a company that used these sociolinguistic techniques to solve real problems in real time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you, what type of company do you work with? Like, what is the aim, the ideal client?
The ideal client is on the larger side because data works best with larger samples.
Sure, when you have a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Okay,
And it can tell you more. And also companies that are larger tend to care more about overarching trends.
Okay.
Because if you only have 5 employees, it's easy to just check in with each employee. Whereas if you have 500 employees, you would want to have some sort of meta-analysis to give you an idea of just trends over time.
Sure.
So the ideal client is larger, like 50 or more employees about.
Okay.
And the only other requirement really is that they need to be sort of already forward-thinking and innovative enough to be willing to try something new.
Sure.
Because as you can imagine, a huge like challenge for me on the sales side is that every single time I meet with a potential client, I have to explain this from the very beginning.
Oh.
Because nobody knows what linguistics is.
Sure.
And it's hard for them to imagine how it can benefit them, even though I think by the time we get there, most people see the value, but it takes a little while.
Sure.
So I try to target companies that are already interested in employee engagement, that are already doing, like, in you know, that are already putting an effort into programs that would improve company culture, mm-hmm. things like that.
Okay. How do you find them?
Well, honestly, I just use my network
okay.
to figure out who might be interested.
Sure.
And then I ask for introductions.
Okay.
And then I ask for meetings.
Sure.
And then I ask for the sale.
All right.
And it's sort of, you know, it takes a long time, but overall it's been, like, fairly effective.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Sure. That's okay. So are you finding it hard? This is one of those things that I find a lot of entrepreneurs, they're very good at a certain skill,
mm-hmm.
and then they have to go out and sell, and they have these negative connotations about salespeople
yeah.
in general, right? I imagine from the language that they've had to use with salespeople at some point, or had used on them, whatever, and now they have to sell their own business. So has that been a challenge for you, or is it super smooth and easy?
Well, I wouldn't say it's super smooth and easy, but I don't mind selling my services.
Mm-hmm.
What's hard is that when you're starting out and you're on your own, mm-hmm. you not only have to be the salesperson, but you also have to be the person doing the actual analysis.
Sure. Yep.
Right. So I think for me, especially like, so I've been at this now for 5 months, which isn't okay. that long.
Sure.
But I'm sort of approaching like a growth point where, mm-hmm. you know, I have to be doing the analysis, but that keeps me really busy.
Right.
But then I don't have time to be going out and making the next
sure.
sale for the next
sure.
project.
To fill the pipeline, kinda.
Yes. So mm-hmm. that for me is the biggest challenge.
Uh-huh.
But I don't actually personally mind doing the selling. I think
okay.
it's okay.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah, I like meeting with people, and mm-hmm. I totally believe in the value of my product. So it's
sure.
easy for me to. I don't know, say that it's worth their time and money.
No, it's a super cool service. Super cool service. So how did you mentioned pricing, without talking specific numbers or mm-hmm. anything like that, how do you figure out how to price something when you don't necessarily have any direct competitors to even compare to?
I know. It's been a huge challenge. Pricing has been one of the biggest challenges
okay.
for me. So I started out with just doing an hourly price
mm-hmm.
that is on the lower side of a typical range for a consultant.
Sure.
Because I'm like, well, that's what people are sort of used to seeing. And
sure.
if I make it slightly lower than the fact that the service is new, it sort of accounts for that. So that's sort of what I've been doing so far. But I'm finding, like, over testing and measuring the pricing, I'm finding that it's a little bit low for the amount of time and effort it takes to analyze all
mm-hmm.
the samples.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm thinking that I'm probably going to have to raise those prices a little bit.
See, that's so funny. I hear the word probably and I'm like, no, you totally got to raise your prices.
Yeah. You know, it's hard when you don't have any clients because you're at first in
mm-hmm.
the very beginning, because you
mm-hmm.
just want to get the first client.
Sure.
And you're sort of willing to do it
right.
for any price because
sure.
you just want to get started.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then as you go, you sort of learn what your time is worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you figure it out. So I'm sort of still learning that. But yeah, I'm at the point where I'm like ready to make the next leap in
you
the pricing.
You just got to do it.
Yeah.
I have the sign in my office that says, for my clients to see, it says, no, well, I guess, and myself to see, right? No one will ever pay you more than you believe you are worth.
Yeah.
Because I have a ton of clients. Almost every single client that comes into my office, we meet and we figure out, like, how did you get your pricing? And essentially, they pulled it out of thin air, right? Maybe
right.
they looked at their competitors or whatever. They figured it out or they average it out. But then they wonder, like, why am I not making any money?
Right.
Like, well, you didn't compare what you have to make in order just to sustain, to live.
Right.
And to maintain your skill set and education, all that kind of stuff. And to be able to afford all that is more expensive than you think it is, really.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, and at the end of the day, you know, most companies, once they sort of get their feet wet, are willing to pay that price.
Absolutely.
You know, you just have to be willing to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And that's just something that takes, like, it just took a little bit of trial and error for me. Because I don't, like you said, I don't have anyone really to compare
right.
my services to. So I wasn't really sure where
that
to start.
That just means you can charge as much as you want.
Yeah.
Like, this is what it is, right?
Right.
So it's interesting. You have a similar challenge to what we have with Calls on Call.
Yeah.
Is that we're trying to educate people what we do, and then we try to sell them.
Right.
Whereas if you try to sell them before the education, they say no because they have no idea what it is you do.
Yes, absolutely. But isn't that hard, though? I find that for me, that means that what would normally, like, take 2 meetings to get to a sale
mm-hmm.
takes 4. And then that's a lot of my time.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
So I have a 4-meeting cap. If you haven't figured it out by 4 meetings, like whether you understand what the service is, great. And then whether you have figured out if the service can work for you or not, great. If after 4 meetings, then you're just wasting time.
Right.
I feel like the people that specifically with calls on call, well, I guess, and drawing customers, the clients that really do well with us are the ones that are able to make the decision fairly quickly.
Yes.
And whether it's a yes or no really doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. I mean, yeses are great, but in the end, if a person's going to meet with us 6 times and end up with a no,
yeah,
I'd rather find that out as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
I don't want to waste their time, and I certainly don't want to waste my time.
Yes.
Plus, when you give a 4-meeting max, that essentially fills up that the whole Parkinson's Law thing.
Right.
Where the time you give to a project, whatever, will get filled up with that project, right?
Yeah, actually, that's a great idea, doing a meeting cap. I definitely should start doing that, mm-hmm. because that is frustrating for me, too. Realizing that, you know, you want them to fully understand what you're doing, so you want to give them time to think mm-hmm. about it and decide, but at the same time, you have to be, if they're going to say no, you have to be finding somebody else.
Right.
You know?
Right. And we live in a place in the Midwest where people make decisions extremely slowly.
Yes.
Just brutally slow. I don't know how anybody gets through a green light. They're just like, shut up, it's kind of amber. I don't know. Anyways, it's just a weird, weird area in that regard. So
yes.
I feel like sometimes you just need to either just walk away, right? Like
right.
maybe they would have said yes after meeting number 12, but I'm not willing to wait and find out.
Right, exactly.
I can go talk to other business owners that have, after a meeting or two, mm-hmm. are just fine.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge. Challenge of any business that's trying to educate.
Yes.
This is what we do. This is who we are. It's not like we're selling pizza or something like that that people just get.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. Right. So when did you decide, or I guess what was the first step that you took to actually start this business?
So while I was still finishing my master's, I sort of had the idea during my graduate work,
mm-hmm.
And I was holding on to it. I'd, you know, thinking about it,
sure.
ruminating on it, and I hadn't really decided if I was going to do it or not. My whole sort of life trajectory, I always thought I was going to just go for the PhD and stay mm-hmm. in academia and be a researcher.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But then, halfway through my master's program, I had a baby.
Oh, that'll do it.
That'll do it. Yeah, and it sort of was liberating because you just realize how, like, you're not really in control of anything.
Right? Fair.
And for some people, when they have kids and they have that feeling of, like, I'm not in control, that gives them more anxiety.
Sure.
And for me, it gave me less anxiety, and it was really empowering, and I felt like, well, I don't really control anything, so
sure.
I might as well take this risk and just go for it.
All right.
And so it was, yeah.
That's interesting. That's so cool.
It was empowering, and that's what sort of made me decide I was going to do it.
All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you found out you're pregnant, and you're like, the best time to start a business is when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
There's so many people that have babies and make businesses at the same time. It's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it. Like, yeah.
Just like, let's do it. We're building all kinds of stuff here. Let's just go crazy.
Yes. Go big or go home.
Sure. That's awesome. So when you had your kid, you started your business. I imagine those happened right around the same time.
Yeah. Well, I sort of had decided that I was going to do the business, and then did a lot of like background legwork preparing mm-hmm. to launch.
Okay.
So by the time I launched, my son was almost one.
Okay.
Already. Yeah, and I launched at Forward Fest.
Sure, yep, I was there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Had sort of a launch event.
Sure.
Yeah, and that was sort of the beginning of client acquisition
sure.
stage.
Nice. So when you said backwards legwork,
yeah.
what did that entail?
So for me, it looked like collecting a lot of research
mm-hmm.
And putting together the collections of research that I was going to use to do the actual analyses.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's obviously, as a linguist, it's important that all of my techniques are research-based
sure.
and backed up by, you know, tried and true methods that mm-hmm. actually work.
Sure.
So even though this service has never been done in the business world, it's been done for decades mm-hmm. in an academic context.
Gotcha.
And so there are things that work and things that don't work, and mm-hmm. there are different, you know, paradigms and strategies and ways to collect the data.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of that was research.
Okay.
And then getting advice from mm-hmm. linguists on how to approach, you know, the kinds of data sets that I would be dealing with in the mm-hmm. business world.
Sure.
And even though none of them had necessarily done that exact work, it was important to me that I just was approaching it from a very like prepared and
sure.
educated
sure.
yeah, place.
So when you brought this idea up, when you're looking for research and all this jazz, mm-hmm. you're doing the legwork essentially, and you're talking to other linguists, are they saying, holy cow, this is a great idea? Are they saying you're crazy?
They're all saying, like, this is a great idea. Yeah, they were all totally on board, and which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and it was good.
What did you have any challenges or any second thoughts or anything of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people who've started a business would say that, like, half the time you have second thoughts.
It's only 12 hours a day.
Yeah, right? 12 hours of the day is second thoughts, and the other 12 hours is like, this is the best thing ever.
Sure.
It fluctuates a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that for the first 2 years, mm-hmm. it fluctuates a lot.
Yeah.
And then you sort of hit a rhythm where mm-hmm. it fluctuates less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell you that's, when I first started my business in 2006, it was a lot of feast and famine. Because you're still
yes.
filling your pipeline, and you're waiting for the checks to come in.
Yes.
It's interesting, as you grow, you can see, like, sales tax is due once a quarter, and then it becomes due once a month, and then it becomes due early part of the month. So you can see, like, okay, well, the state's paying attention to my growth. That's
yeah.
cool. And then you can see, well, how many times am I running to the bank to deposit checks? This is before remote deposit was common, or you had to pay extra for it. So, like, first, it was $1,000 that I'd deposit. Then I'd wait for $2,000, then $2,500, then $5,000. Then if I didn't have $8,000 to deposit, I'll just let those checks sit. Like, you build it up to
yeah.
the point where, like, wait, I have $8,000 just tacked on the wall there, just waiting for me to go to the bank, but I don't want to waste a trip kind of thing. That's kind of a cool feeling.
It's a great feeling.
But you probably go just deposit those checks kind of thing, right? Other people have to balance their checkbooks and
yeah.
all that jazz.
Yes. So, I mean, that's like, I still, even though when I look back on the last 5 months
mm-hmm.
and how things have gone,
mm-hmm.
I think anybody would say that things are going well,
mm-hmm.
but I still have days where I'm like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? This is a lot of work.
Oh.
I could just be doing
sure.
anything. I could
mm-hmm.
be doing anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I'm sort of choosing the path that's harder
right.
because I'm doing something that I think is really cool.
Right.
So there are still days when I'm like, you know, you don't feel great about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the overall arc is super positive. And I know that that's just the nature of growth.
Sure.
Like, that it's hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Nobody said it was going to be easy, right?
Yeah.
I joke with my clients. I'm like, people, there's articles, there's documentaries, all this kind of stuff about people that climb super high mountains.
Yeah.
Nobody gets excited because you stepped over a crack in the sidewalk.
Right.
Right, like it was monumental or something like that. Like, there has to be a challenge for it to do any good.
Yes.
That's a challenge of some kind, and it's your perspective whether you enjoy it or hate it.
Right.
So it sounds like you're enjoying it, which is super awesome.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy the challenge. It adds like an extra mental load
mm-hmm.
to my life.
Sure. No, that's completely fair.
But I totally enjoy the challenge, and that's sort of, I've always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a good fit for me.
Nice.
I have the right personality to tackle
sure.
tackle it.
Sure.
But yeah, I definitely, after doing it, though, I can see how being a business owner is not for everybody.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. There's a certain tolerance level, let's say a stomach that you have to tolerate working with people.
Yes.
Or even figuring out what your next step is, not to be overwhelmed. When
yeah.
a lot of people just crack under stuff like that.
And being willing to do all of the dirty work.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, making the phone calls, sending the emails, talking to people, selling, all that jazz.
Juggling lots and lots of things at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's like definitely a certain skill set.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and employees to all that mix. It'll be great.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, what is the intention of the plan for growth?
Well, I thought for a while that by sort of this time next year, I would probably be ready to hire someone, or at least, you know, outsource some work to maybe a grad student
mm-hmm.
in linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I think about it, the more I think my resources would be better spent really getting that software tool developed
uh-huh.
because it's cheaper than hiring somebody.
Sure.
And it can do the work. It'll help me do the work so much faster.
Oh,
that
nice.
I think it'll really help me grow without having to hire someone.
Nice.
For at least a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Long term, my vision, obviously, for the company is that it is a company that hires linguists
mm-hmm.
to do language
sure.
analysis for
sure.
businesses. Yeah, so that's definitely what I want to do. But, you know, the longer I can postpone hiring someone, the easier
sure.
things
a little less
are.
Headache there.
Yeah.
Totally get it. Totally get it, yeah.
Yeah.
Employees can be a headache, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited someday to have a team to work with because, you know, being, like, doing it all by yourself can
mm-hmm.
sometimes be lonely. Or sometimes you just wish you had someone to bounce ideas off of
mm-hmm.
To help you make decisions.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, but in the end, especially just, you know, for profitability
mm-hmm.
and stuff, yeah, the longer I can grow without hiring,
sure.
I'm going to sort of max that out, I think.
Right?
So, yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
Prioritizing the software tool.
Sure. So do you work out of your home or do you have a separate office?
I don't have an office. I work out of my home.
Okay. That's all right.
Yeah. And it's fine.
You don't, yeah, realistically, I don't think you just need a computer anywhere, really.
Really? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I have to leave my home because you know how it is. Like, if you're at your house, you're tempted to do other house
oh,
things.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I have to leave because if my wife is there, she will assume that I'm not working.
Yeah.
Even if I'm at the computer with stuff in front of me, just clearly working, she'll say, hey, you know, and start having a conversation completely not related to work. And kind of, like, I don't want to be mean.
Yeah.
But realistically, it's
right.
working time, right? You're in the zone. You don't want to get interrupted with
yes.
laundry or whatever.
Well, exactly. I mean, I like it's hard for me because, you know, if I have a bunch of like dishes piled up or laundry or something,
mm-hmm.
it's hard for me to not do that
sure.
if I'm at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I just think like, oh, well, you know, I can just throw a load in and then
sure.
fold a load and then get back to work.
Right.
But you don't really want, you know, it's amazing how quickly those minutes
sure.
add up.
5 minutes will turn into 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's important to, yeah, sometimes I definitely leave a lot to do work anywhere else. Sometimes
sure.
I come to the library here, sometimes a coffee shop. But
sure.
Yeah, all I need is my computer at
right.
this point. So
nice.
It works to be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So can you help clients nationally or internationally, or is it mostly Midwest, or how does that work?
I mean, I can analyze a data set from anywhere.
Okay.
My expertise is in English linguistics, so
okay.
even though I myself speak German and Spanish,
mm-hmm.
I would not feel comfortable taking on a data set in one of those languages.
Sure, that's fair.
But yeah, the data could come from anywhere
mm-hmm.
At any time, and I could analyze
okay.
it. Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a website?
I do have a website.
Okay, what is it?
It's www.memralanguageservices.com.
All right.
Yeah.
Easy enough. Memralanguageservices.com.
Yeah.
Nice. And is there a phone number at all?
There's no phone number.
No phone number.
No,
okay.
Just
yeah. go to the website. This is language. All right.
Yep.
Away you go. So if you were to, let's just say, there's a lot of listeners that are small businesses,
yeah.
right? Probably smaller than you would typically work with.
Sure.
So if you were to give them some advice in regards to their business or dealing with people or whatever it is in that regards for language, what are, let's just say, the top three pieces of advice that you would give them?
Well, first I would say that even knowing just a really small amount,
mm-hmm.
like just a little bit about how language works.
Sure.
And how different people use language differently
mm-hmm.
can completely change the way you interact with people.
Oh.
And it doesn't take much.
Sure.
It's just that most people, like, it's research-based and most people just don't know it.
Sure.
Right? So even talking about, like, you know, women, you are more indirect
mm-hmm.
and men are more direct. Or women, when to build rapport amongst each other, often do troubles talk. But when, which is, they share their problems, right?
Okay.
So if I'm with my friend, I might say like, oh, you know, so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. And then I
sure.
expect her to also share a problem. But
huh.
this breaks down
okay.
when you're talking to someone who doesn't troubles talk,
right.
like men.
Right.
So if I share a problem with my husband, he thinks that I want him to fix the problem.
Yes.
But actually, it's a rapport building strategy, right? And all this is subconscious. And it's just how you're raised. All
right.
So even, and that takes, it's not hard to learn that, but once you know it,
mm-hmm.
it changes everything.
Sure.
And if you are someone who has even 1, 2, or 3 employees,
mm-hmm.
Understanding that can change the way you interact with them, especially if you're a male and you have a female employee who wants to talk to you about her problems, mm-hmm. it might feel like, why is she always, does she want me to fix all these things?
Right.
But it's probably just rapport building, which means she's just trying to become your, like, your friend or get to know you better.
Sure. Yeah. So it's awareness. So I can tell you I've probably messed up just about every employee I've had, because the majority have been female.
Yeah.
And the majority have a problem of some kind that they came to me with. And I went, like, I fix stuff. That's my job. That's what I do. So I just went straight into fix it mode.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously you have to, you know, assess the situation, because sometimes there are problems that do need to be fixed.
Sure.
But when women interact with each other, mm-hmm. It's like discussing problems in a way that doesn't lead to a fix it solution.
Never.
It's completely common, though.
I always wondered why they would talk like that. Like, yeah. You've been talking for 10 years about the same problem.
Yeah.
And it's they're completely fine with that?
Yeah, well, because it's the goal, like the subconscious goal of the conversation mm-hmm. isn't really to solve the problem. It's to build relationship. Huh. And men do that differently than women do. And so it's just one of those things that if you know that,
sure.
it eases, like, it helps you make more, like, I don't know, meaningful relationships with people who are, like, you know, the opposite gender that
sure.
you are. Yeah.
I just feel Cro-Magnon right now.
Yeah. Like,
there's so much deeper conversation than what I've been realizing, I guess.
Yeah.
That's
so
interesting.
I mean, that's what I would say. You know, it's a really easy thing for, like, a business owner to mm-hmm. just learn a little bit. Like,
okay.
it would, like, you know, a one-hour conversation about here are some of the high-level things mm-hmm. about talking with people who are different than you. And
sure.
they can be different in lots of ways.
Okay.
It can be by gender, race, ethnicity, anything like that.
Sure.
Age.
Okay.
Yeah. And there are some high-level things you can learn that'll completely change the way you interact with your employees.
Nice.
And your clients.
All right.
Which is important, too.
Very important.
Yeah.
Awesome. So awareness is tip number one.
Yes.
What's another tip?
Oh, man.
I'm just putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, right? I don't know. I sort of feel like I'm so new to the whole thing that it's hard for me to give advice.
Sure. That's fair. So let's just think of the last few clients that you've had.
Yeah.
Some of the common problems that you see. Is there a theme that you're like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing this again?
Yeah. So I guess a common problem that I see is that when people... So in terms of data analysis, let's just say you have a survey question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free response. So one thing that already exists in the world is mm-hmm. sentiment analysis.
Okay.
And there's, like, software for that.
Sure.
So basically you could put all of your language data into, you know, a sentiment analysis software, and it would mm-hmm. tell you if what the sentiment is, which just means, like, is this positive or negative
sure.
or neutral?
Okay.
Sort of give you, like, what the general sentiment of the speech, like, language is.
Sure.
So the problem with that is that sometimes companies will have, like, let's say, you know, the topic is company culture,
mm-hmm.
and they see that the sentiment is really positive.
Mm-hmm.
Their, like, natural conclusion is like, wow, like, our employees are talking about our company culture, and they're talking about it positively.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. We're doing a great job with that.
All right.
And it's not that that's not true, but doing a more detailed language analysis can really give you a deeper picture mm-hmm. into what that actually looks like. So when I do a language analysis, if you compare sentiment with conflict score or politeness,
mm-hmm.
You might get a picture that's like, well, every time your employees talk about company culture, it's generally very positive. However, they're also using really, like, they have a high politeness score.
Okay.
Which you wouldn't expect.
Uh-huh.
So if you're really positive and comfortable with a topic,
mm-hmm.
your politeness score is lower.
Sure.
So politeness is higher when there's discomfort.
Oh, because they're trying to sugarcoat a little.
Yeah, because they're trying to mitigate the
sure.
conversation. Whereas if you're talking about something that's super routine,
right.
you'll have a low politeness score.
Sure.
So what that means then is, yes, employees do think that your company culture is good. However, it's a sensitive topic for them, and they're using a lot of mitigated speech to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
which is just a really simple example of how, the picture isn't, it's not always what you might think if you
sure.
just scan for sentiment or content.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this polite stuff, because you have me intrigued with this.
Okay.
Is this please and thank you stuff, or am I reading the polite word incorrectly?
It is please and thank you are, like, one feature that is included in politeness, but there's mm-hmm. lots of different linguistic strategies that okay. indicate you're trying to be polite.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. So one really good one is modals.
Okay.
So like would, should, could, can, and may.
Okay.
They're words that you add before the verb usually mm-hmm. that like their function is to mitigate the sentence to be more polite.
Okay.
So like could you go close the window for me?
Gotcha.
It's still more polite than go close the window.
Sure.
Right? And that's a strategy that people use is inserting modals. Another strategy is to be polite is that instead of giving a directive, like telling someone to do something, they'll give advice in a depersonalized way.
Okay.
So generally, linguists understand that if you're giving someone advice, like the category of advice means that it doesn't have any direct personal benefit to you.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, me right now, if I'm giving advice to business owners,
mm-hmm.
It's like I'm just giving them advice based on their situation,
sure.
but not for any personal gain.
Sure.
Right? So what people tend to do if they're trying to be super polite is that they'll actually give a directive in the form of advice.
Oh. So like eat your vegetables kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of could you eat your vegetables or would you eat your vegetables?
Or like something like, well, everybody, like I really think that everybody should eat their vegetables.
Oh. Okay.
When they're
so completely disconnected.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I see that a lot when companies are asking for their employees to give them feedback.
Okay.
Employees will say things, try to make it super general to distance themselves as a politeness strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So they might say something like, well, I really value having a wellness program as part of my benefits package so that I can, you know, get points for going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice there's no directive.
Yeah.
They're not actually telling the company what they want. They're not giving any feedback.
Right.
All they're saying is making a super general advice statement.
Right.
And the reason they're doing that is because they're trying to be extra polite.
Okay.
So
they're protecting themselves essentially while they're giving the statement.
Yeah.
They're protecting themselves from any recourse.
Right. And so that just looks like completely changing the sentence form.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying like, so let's say that a company asks the question like, what should we be doing better?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying like, I think your benefits package is lacking and I would really like to have
mm-hmm.
a wellness program.
Mm-hmm.
They say something like, like what I just said before.
Yeah.
Like, well, in general, it's important for me that a benefits
sure.
package has a wellness program.
Sure. Sugar, sugar, sugar. Okay.
Yeah.
And separate.
And there's no please.
Sure.
There's no like, thank you. There's no would you, could you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just completely changing the structure of the sentence.
Sure.
So that it sounds like advice instead of a directive.
Sure.
And that's a politeness strategy too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different factors that you have to consider when you're measuring politeness.
Sure.
But yeah, all of them sort of add up to create a picture of
sure.
like how people mitigate their language to be more polite.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Huh. I wonder, now I'm going to have to listen to see, do I do these things?
Yeah.
I can, you know, it's interesting because as you're talking about this, I can picture like, okay, I've heard other people talk that way
mm-hmm.
and I've read other people talk that way and I have been accused of being too direct when I like to tell people just do this. I don't
yeah.
need to sugarcoat it or anything because it's not like I've been accused of this by my employees, some employees, of just being too direct, asking them to, hey, can you send this email kind of thing? And I'm like, I didn't know I needed to sugarcoat that. And I don't even know how I would sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
Something makes me feel like I would like this email to be sent to the client or whatever. I just, it's
right.
even hard for me to imagine how to sugarcoat it. But my point is, I wonder if I come across as mean sometimes when I'm trying to be just direct and fast.
Yeah, it's hard to know, but you know, maybe it's not so much meanness, but like if you have a majority of female employees,
mm-hmm.
maybe they just feel like you are not making any effort to communicate in their communication style.
Oh, that's fair. Okay.
So it's not that they think you're mean. They just think like, well, he clearly, you know, doesn't know anything about us or how we communicate.
Sure. Sure. Nobody understands me.
Right. Maybe. I don't know. It's
sure.
just a guess. But you make a good point that, like, anyone who's ever tried to learn a second language mm-hmm. knows how hard it is to learn.
I'm trying to learn Spanish, and it blows my mind.
It's hard, right?
Yeah.
It's very hard.
It's interesting, because I was just talking with someone about this weekend. How you learn a word like leche, mm-hmm. right, which is milk, and I'm trying to associate leche with an image of milk rather than connecting it to the word milk. So that I don't have to go from English to Spanish to definition.
Yeah.
That I can go from Spanish to definition. Or maybe I switch that around. Anyways, then I learn words like the, where they have male and female. That just blows my mind. Because now I'm supposed to figure out what is this culture
right.
believe that this item, this noun, this item is female or male.
Yeah.
And things like milk. Okay, I get that that's female. But there's going to be all these words that I have to learn what the words are, like paper. Is it female paper? Is it male paper? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and I'm way, way, way beginning. So yeah. I'm probably not even given a solid idea here. But I'm learning. There's two the's, male and female. That alone, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah. And that's so true. And not only is it hard to learn, like people think of learning a language as learning a second language, but even within your own language, like within mm-hmm. English, it's hard to learn somebody else's conversational style.
Oh, sure.
So if you're really indirect,
mm-hmm.
or if you're like you, if you're really direct,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, I can't even imagine how I would say this differently to right. get my point across, mm-hmm. it's hard because it's language learning, and
sure.
it's hard to learn languages. And
sure.
because language as a system is incredibly complex.
Mm-hmm.
Grammar is complex, and on top of grammar, all of the meaning and associating meaning.
Sure.
With not only the words, but the context and all the other things that go into creating meaning,
mm-hmm.
It's not easy.
Right. Then yes. you add tone.
Yes.
And okay.
So there's a lot of factors.
Sure.
And yeah, so that's why, though, miscommunications happen, right?
That's completely true.
But the thing is that even though it's hard, it mm-hmm. is something that is countable
mm-hmm.
and measurable mm-hmm. and learnable.
That's fair.
Which is different than something like a word like culture,
mm-hmm.
which feels like you can't ever fully understand it mm-hmm. if it's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent, language is like that too. But unlike culture, which is sort of a nebulous idea
sure.
that's hard to grasp, language mm-hmm. is something you can see and hear and count
mm-hmm.
and measure.
Sure. Interesting. Okay, so you're taking something that people perceive as subjective
mm-hmm.
and making it essentially objective.
Yeah.
So that you can measure it and then improve it.
Right, improve it. Yeah, because I always like to do this is sort of part of my sales pitch, but the idea that language, everybody talks
mm-hmm.
and everybody is using language to get their jobs done at work every day.
Sure.
It doesn't matter what field you're in.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're in construction or if you're a web developer.
Sure.
You have to talk to get your job done.
Totally true.
And that means that language is the primary technology that you use in your workplace to
uh-huh.
achieve business outcomes.
Fair.
And if you're not making sure that that technology is running smoothly.
Right. You got a problem.
You got a problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Mm-hmm.
So before we close out here, is there anything that you would recommend to people that have their own business? Like, where can they find this awareness that you were talking about?
Well, they should feel free to send me an email.
Okay.
What's
your email address?
It's samantha.memra@gmail.com. And
awesome.
You can find that on the website, too.
Okay.
If you're looking for that. And, yeah, I guess another thing is a really good resource is the Linguist List.
The Linguist List. Okay,
yeah.
What is that?
It's just a website that is maintained by linguists that sort of takes a lot of research and on different topics, like
sure.
how men and women communicate differently.
Nice.
And distills it in nice, short little articles.
Sure.
So if you're just independently curious and you just want to read around,
all right.
that's a good resource.
If
yeah.
a business owner is not independently curious, they will be out of business pretty short. Is there anything you wish I would have asked you?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, super awesome. Well, Samantha, this has been awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I think you taught me the most I could possibly learn in an hour on my own show here. This is crazy. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program, woohoo, that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com, and of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Samantha Beaver of Memra Language Services. That's Memra, M-E-M-R-A.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Samantha. This has been awesome.
Thank you.
Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.